stand-up comedy has to be one of the most challenging jobs out there. But can you imagine how challenging it must be to translate a stand-up routine for the deaf community while standing alongside the comedian on stage? That's exactly what Catherine King, a Scottish Sign Language interpreter, spends a lot of her professional life doing. She's worked with a bunch of top comedians, including a few Irish ones like Dara O'Brien, Tommy Tiernan and Jim Owen. She's currently interpreting, by the way, during this year's Edinburgh International Festival, which is going on throughout the month of August. So good morning, Catherine. Catherine, how on earth does one get involved in translating into sign language for a bunch of mad comedians?
It was a very good question. I honestly can vaguely remember how it happened. Kind of a fluke, really. Scottish interpreters tend to be trained to do absolutely everything. We work in doctor surgeries, hospitals, courts, anything that's required, we do. And then over the years, we get sort of comfortable in certain areas and, I kind of ended up in comedy. So I'm not quite sure.
If you're a qualified BSL, as it says, which is a British Sign Language interpreter, what did you start out doing? Where would you have to be doing things? It's not stuff necessarily in front. Is it like speaking in front of a large audience and just in case, like, or is it in courts?
Well, yeah, I used to do a lot of court work. I used to do a lot of conferences. So I was kind of comfortable being on stage, but it's very different to be on stage where, and I do theatre as well, so it's different to be on stage where you can't really see the whites of people's eyes. You know, you've got blinding lights in your eyes and you really can't see anyone in a darkened auditorium. Comedy, and particularly my first gig at the Pleasance Cabaret Bar in Edinburgh for Adam Hills, that was probably the scariest night of my life. When you can actually see people right, they're sitting there in front of you at a little cabaret table, and kind of you can see if they're laughing and you can see if they're not laughing. And I don't know how stand-up comedians do it, because it terrified the life of me standing there.
Yeah, but I don't quite get, like, if you say you're at a conference and you do this, like, it's all kind of quite formal and all together, and maybe there's a bit of PowerPoint going on and the person is probably very academic or whatever it happens to be. But, like, this is a seat-of-the-pants stand-up, often very improv and just suddenly off the top of their heads, etc., you know? I mean, we were talking about, you know, Robin Williams during the week of just how brilliant he is at improvisation and stuff. Yeah. He can just make it up as he goes along. Like, as they make it up as they go along, like, it can't be, like, I don't get how you can do it. Tell me how you do it. Catherine.
I'd quite like you to ask that at the end of the festival when I remember how I do it, because on Friday night I have my first gig, and it's Jamon, actually. He's my first comedy gig of the festival, and I watch the show, I record the show in notebooks, I take lots of notes, and I unpack it a lot in my head. I do a lot of kind of wandering around my living room unpacking the joke to try and find where the kernel of the funny bit is. And then once I've deconstructed it till it's kind of not funny for me anymore, then I have to build it back up into a parallel joke in BSL, a parallel piece of comedy in BSL that is funny for deaf people while still being true to that source that for example, Jamon is producing.
But
wait a minute. That's how I do it.
Okay, but are you, like, when you're live on stage and people are laughing because the first time they've heard it and it's the 10th time you've assimilated into your brain, or maybe the third or fourth or whatever, are you not laughing and therefore look very austere and very kind of, you know, uninvolved?
Well, no, I try not to look so austere. I try to stay quite loose and quite relaxed, because even though it's not kind of a visceral laugh for me anymore, that the audience are experiencing, I'm not having that experience anymore, it's still funny. I mean, these guys are really professional. These women are really professional. They know how to work the room. They know how to work an audience. And there's a real atmosphere about it. So it's best to stay loose and keep a smile on my face and try not to show everyone how hard I'm working internally, which is what stand-up comedians do. They look
sure.
like they're having a
but
ball,
I get the
but
impression
working
from,
incredibly hard.
Okay, but I do get the impression from what you've said that when you started with the call from the comedian Adam Hills, that was one of the scariest moments of your life. But once you got through that and realised you were now in kind of choppy waters but were able to swim, I take it that since Adam was probably very happy enough with you, that you're now making a living at it. So it must be working out pretty good.
It's only a part of my work. But I mean, well, okay. It's working out okay. It's working out well. When the festival rolls out of town, you know, at the end of August, I go on doing my theatre work. I go on doing the conferences and the academic work that I do. And when comedians come rolling back into town, or they're somewhere nearby and they need someone, then sometimes I'm lucky enough to get the call and I go ahead and work for them locally as well. I've had a couple of great opportunities to work with Adam Hills on stage in London. He even made a DVD in which just like you can call up subtitles, you can call me up and I'm on the side of the screen, because we recorded it at the Apollo Hammersmith last year. So those are great moments to do. In fact, that's the second most scary moment in my life, standing on the stage of the Apollo Hammersmith and looking at it and thinking, I've never seen anything so big in my life.
Yeah, I can pretty well understand that, all right. So basically, some comedians go off on tangents. Every comedian is different. Yeah. It's not that easy. Obviously, there's going to be lots of ad-lib stuff and you just have to go with it. I presume it's really down to you know what you're doing and you have to be confident. It's as simple as that, like any other gig.
It's a bit like that. You do have to be confident. But for some reason, it's Irish comedians who always get me. Jason Byrne and Dara O'Brien, I find really hard to be on stage with, because even if I know what they're going to say, just the way they do it, the way they work the piece of material they're using, I just dissolve into laughter, and I find it too hard to work for Jason and Dara, which is a shame because I'm a huge fan of both of them.
Well, like a lot of stand-up comedians, particularly I think, well, Jason Byrne definitely, but Dara O'Brien definitely, like they talk even faster than I do. It's a mile a minute. Like it's just that they never stop.
Yeah, but I'm from Glasgow, so
answered that question. Now, I presume certain comedy proves to be more of a challenge than others. Is there anything you dread the most?
I have this recurring nightmare that I'm booked for a gig that consists entirely of puns and palindromes. That would floor me completely. Yeah.
I'm just thinking, like, puns and palindromes, how do you work that out? Like, you know, words that spelled backwards or sentences or whatever, or puns that are specifically a reference to something. How do you assimilate that in the space of seconds?
Well, the truth of the answer is that those kind of comedies don't really translate properly. They don't translate easily. They translate with an awful lot of work behind them, a lot of unpacking. And when a comedy is so rooted in one particular language or one particular experience, it's very difficult to move it into a different culture or a different language.
Yeah, yeah.
And we see people like Eddie Izzard trying, you know, for the past, 15 years he's been doing it, trying to go to Europe, trying to broaden his work with comedy and take it into Europe and learn from them, learn about their cultures and try and kind of feed that back to them. And that's kind of the same thing here. The comedians are... they're very funny in their own language with their own culture, and then when I have to move that into a different culture and a different language, then it's me that encounters problems. But one of the great things is if you have comedians that trust you and can work with you, that makes it a lot easier. And the guys I work with, particularly Adam, Jamone, Daniel Sloth and Craig Hill, these people, they trust me now after all these years.
Sure, hold on a second. I'm like, trust you and work with you. I would get the impression that, like, you know, the least of their worries is the fact that you're there on stage. Like, they're not even, I would imagine, with all due respect to their chivalry, etc., that they don't really give two hoots that you're there or not. They can't. I'm like, would the comedians ever take into account your knowledge and experience and then alter their routine, if you like, in any way, to help make your job easier?
Occasionally they have done. Because if they care about their audience, that's the main thing. It's always about the audience for the comedian and for me as well. It's about the audience experience. So I do remember a long, long time ago when I first kind of came across Adam Hills, we first started working together, and this really showed me who he is, this the kind of guy he is. He used to do a piece about a song from Aha called Take On Me. It has a very high last note, and he used to do a little kind of comedic routine around that. It's very funny for people who remember the song and who have been the idiot on the dance floor trying to reach that high note. That's not something that was easily translated into a culture that doesn't have that kind of musical kind of memory. So I talked to him about it. So he just took it out of the show.
Really?
For the night that I was working. He took it out and put in something else that was just as funny, but more easy to move into a different culture.
Right, I get you.
And that really impressed me.
Well, let's get back to Dara O'Brien then. Have you ever sat down with Dara and advised him against this or changed this? Or, you know, like I do sign language, you might be better off doing this in sign language.
There was an Amnesty International benefit gig up here at the festival a few years ago now, and I was working for Dara at it on his little sort of 7-minute piece. And he was good enough to sit backstage with me and talk me through what he was hoping to do on stage. And he told me a piece that he does about mixed marriages. It's a very funny piece about one side of the church all singing, two verses, and the other side all singing, multiple verses and choruses, and Auntie Mary passes out. And in his kind of piece about it, he had the piece is given Auntie Mary oxygen or something like that. Someone's giving Auntie Mary oxygen. And I said, well, tough to talk about that because it's not as funny, it's not as visual, it's not a big laugh to talk about giving someone oxygen. But do you know what's funny in BSL is resuscitating someone. That looks much funnier in BSL. So he said, okay, I'll do oxygen and you do resuscitation. So we did. We went on stage and he did the joke with oxygen in it and I did the joke with Auntie Mary needing resuscitation. And it got a big laugh and that was fine. And then he unpacked the whole thing in front of the audience and pointed me out as someone who, you know, not only did Auntie Mary suffer, I had killed her, according to him, which got him another huge laugh as well.
Right. Okay, well, so that's working as close. That's a double act at the end of the day. So would you then, would you end up as part of the routine often? Like, I mean, how close even on the stage are you to the comedian?
Depends on the piece of work and the venue. There's a big venue in Edinburgh called the EICC, which is a splendid venue, but a massive stage. And I worked out with Jamone a few years ago, and I just stood too far away from him. I didn't think it through. But the deaf audience who were there that night emailed us and let us know that it had been really tough to watch him and me, and particularly because of Jamone's brand of comedy, the whole visual punch that goes with it. And, of course, the following year, we changed it. Jamone is a really open guy to that. His production company is very open. So we changed it, and I moved closer to him so that it was easier to see.
I mean, you mentioned the visual stuff there, like of Jamone, but like surely part of the humour with any comedian is their body language and the facial expressions as well as their words. I mean, like, you know, it's a combination of all three. You can't do anything but the words, can you?
No, I do. It's not so much words as more concepts.
Exactly.
It's the concept I'm trying to get to. So, but if there's a particular visual that the comedian does, I try to line up the joke. It's timing. I try and line up the joke either bang on the same time as he delivers it, if he delivers it, or just before them, so that people, particularly with Jamone, people have a chance to look away from me to him, armed with the setup for the joke, and then get the punch from him. So,
there's your other phone ringing. It might be Dara O'Brien looking for you tonight. Listen, just tell me,
it's my big break.
Yeah, right, exactly. Just tell me one thing, Catherine, about this, which is this, like, you know, would you have a favourite moment? Would you have one moment where you ever got off a stage, as opposed to the first time you did it there with Adam Hill, and you just got off and you said, this is bloody great, I love doing this kind of thing. What was the best?
Best moment? I think it might have been at the Lyric Theatre in London a couple of years ago with Adam Hills. We came off stage, he'd recorded it for Channel 4, and we came off stage and went back on for, I think it was supposed to be a 5-minute encore, and he was on for another 25 minutes. And I was kind of dizzy and trying, you know, really, really working hard to stay on my feet. But then these guys in the audience who had been part of the Olympic Games, I think, closing ceremony, deaf men down the front of the audience, and gay deaf men who were kind of shouting up to Adam, signing up to him, and then they revealed that he had a conversation with them through me, and it became that we realised they were strippers or had been strippers in the past, and so they ended up doing a kind of strip tease down the front of the auditorium, which was just, it was ludicrous. We just kind of looked at each other on the stage and thought, how did we end up with this?
But it was a good night, in other words, and a good night of work too. So, like, Catherine, like, you know, I mentioned earlier on the British Sign Language and you're a qualified interpreter and all the rest, but of this stand-up comedian stuff, are you the only one, or are there a lot of comedians having a sign language interpreter at their shows, or is it still uncommon?
It's still fairly uncommon. There's a sense sometimes that people, I've heard this word a few times this week, that it's a bit of a novelty. It really isn't. It's basically, I do a lot of the comedians at the festival, but you're only talking about a handful of them, and it has to be driven by them. They have to come and ask for this because, you know, it's their show, it's their stage, they have to want it.
Yeah. And have you ever done any over here? I mean, have you come across to any of our comedy festivals?
I haven't. I would really, really love to come to Kilkenny. Oh, God. I'd love to come to Kilkenny, but unfortunately, it happens every year at the same time as my six-year-old has a dancing show. So I have a choice. I can either be a good comedy goer or I can be a good mum.
Well, you might as well be a good mum then. Listen, Catherine, thank you very much indeed for talking to us, and enjoy the weekend and all the rest of Edinburgh. Thanks a million, Catherine.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.